Welcome to the Sell or Die Podcast. I'm your host, Jeffrey Gittimer. Well, in this podcast, we're going to help you attract more qualified, unbelievable, ready-to-buy clients. And the one thing you're hoping for, close more deals. It's time to sell or die.
Die hard. As you know, this is Sell or Die. And we're going to talk to a guy today that can revive you if you're almost fucking dead. His name is Chet Lovgren, but this is the most important part. He is the sales doctor. And don't ever forget that. Because if you're on life support, he is the stethoscope and the insurance card that can bring you back to life. Please welcome Chet Lovgren.
Hey, thank you, Jeffrey. Pleasure to be here. That was a fantastic intro. I think we nailed it.
Well, you didn't say a fucking word. Come on. Tell me how you became who you are.
Yeah, I think part of it is self-proclaimed. They say you can't give yourself a nickname, but I went ahead and did it anyway because I didn't care. One of the big things for me is I love the doctor analogy, because I think as salespeople, that's really the approach we have to take. And unfortunately, most salespeople are like modern medicine. I'm a firm believer, someone who's dealt with a lot of health stuff too, like you have to be duly as educated, right? I'm not second guessing someone who spent 10 years in college and has a massive load of student debt when they give me some sort of diagnosis. But unfortunately, there are tons of apps and companies that are available to people to help them educate themselves medically so that they can make sure they're at least expressing what's going on with them in the right way. So a doctor isn't just plugging numbers and symptoms in on a little iPad and getting a result spit back out at them with a prescription. And unfortunately, a lot of salespeople are like that. We try to shove the problems that we think we solve into our prospects' business. We don't do a great job of listening, and we're so fast to want to tell them about what our product does and show them the bells and whistles that we don't really understand what they're going through. We just think, like, I could do that easily in my business. If I'm having a conversation with someone, I could just go, oh, it's just they're having revenue problems. That's what I'll solve for. But it goes much deeper than that. You know, you sell logistics software. You might think, oh, they have inventory management problems. We solve that. Let me show you how. And we're so quick to want to show them our product or our service and talk about it that ultimately we're guilty of malpractice. You know, a doctor who gives a diagnosis without examination in a proper way is guilty of malpractice. And so I think that part of what I pride myself on is being able to shore up the examination process. And more importantly, what does a doctor do in addition to diagnosis? They give you a prognosis. And sorry, but ROI calculators are so 1985. Like, stop doing that. You have to find ways to get your prospect to actually say out of their mouth the value of what it's costing them to be dealing with this pain point and these problems.
Okay, I'm just going to say this. The doctor has the right approach because he doesn't tell you what he got in biology as a grade.
Yeah.
He just focuses on you. Like, how is it? You know, I had a 3.5 grade average. I'm like, I don't give a shit what you had. I got, my thumb hurts. You know, fix that. Oh yeah, thumb. And then he figures out what's wrong by asking you a bunch of questions rather than starting out by saying, looks like your leg hurts. No, doc, it's my thumb. Thumb, I was going to say that next. They come at you with a series of questions that make you identify why you want them or why you need them. And then they're just looking for outcome, not symptoms. The symptoms are there, but I'm going to fix whatever your issue is. I'm a doctor.
And the thing that salespeople forget too is we're all about pain points. And I think it's very important in the lexicon to understand that pain points should be the thing you start with, but they're not the problem. And people live with pain. If you get a headache, Jeffrey, you probably just taking a leave, drink a glass of water, maybe have an apple, take a nap, right? Like, that's what I think 99% of America does, unless they don't know that apples are like the secret cure to headaches. If not, then at least you learned something today. I don't give you any other knowledge than that. But the thing is that people will solve a problem. So if I go to a doctor because I have a headache and I find out I have a brain tumor and I'm going to die and I need to pay whatever money it costs, I'll open up my pocketbook. I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
I'll pull from health insurance, my HSA savings. I'll start a GoFundMe if I have to and ask people for handouts. Like, I don't really care. I will do whatever I have to do in order to get that brain tumor removed. So what we do though, is we go, oh, you have a headache? Here's some Aleve. Or, hey, your headache's really strong. Here's some migraine strength medication. But it's like, well, what about the CT scan? What about the additional symptoms that might lead us to need to do an MRI on the brain? Because this person could be living with a tumor. And I think about it this way. The simplest way I break it down when I teach people about sales conversations is it's okay to hear pain points, but you should be finding ways to stack those pain points into a giant core problem. Because for very simple numbers, let's say I come to you and here's $1,000 pain point that I have that I'm saying is my problem. When you try to sell me a $2,000 solution, there's no payoff for me, right? But if you have this $1,000 pain point, this $1,000 pain point, this $1,000 pain point, you roll those up into a big problem. Now that you're dealing with a $3,000 problem. So now when you try to sell me a $2,000 product or service, boom, I'm at least getting a grand back in my ROI. Very simple numbers. Obviously, a lot of us probably sell larger. Maybe some of us sell smaller deals than that. I'd imagine most of the people listening to a great podcast like this are probably dealing with much larger ACVs or ADSs, whatever you want to, whatever acronym you want to use. That's why a lot of sales reps struggle, because they're trying to meet pain when they need to find the big hairy problem.
They call them big ticket items now.
Okay.
how do I sell a big ticket item? And the answer is, you get better than you are. You believe in your product. You ask great questions. You provide value, and you talk to them about outcomes. And that hasn't changed for 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that's changed in selling over the last 100 years has been the internet. And I mean, it's made a massive change, obviously. And now with AI, it's going to be even more massive. But people don't understand that yet. They will, but they don't understand it yet. The average person has no feeling about AI, when in fact it's the future. And they're going into ChatGPT and they're trying to get them to do a tweet or something. And that's not where it's at. Where it's at is, it's going to help you think in advance, and it's going to provide answers for you that you don't have. And they're going to, those answers are going to come up faster than you can imagine, not just for you, for your friendly competitor. And you have to be advanced at it, or you're going to die at it. And you can't, as a doctor, you can not just say, where does it hurt? You have to say, where does it hurt? And what are you looking at on an everyday basis that you think is giving you the proper answer? What is my competitive doctor saying about this that could be true or not true? So mm-hmm. I have to be a doctor's doctor in today's world. And you're not going to get it by watching Netflix or drinking a beer.
Yeah. No? Those are good things to do. There's no problem with that. Hey, look, I'm 30. I'm going to be 34 next month, and I still play video games from time to time. You know, there's nothing wrong with that, but place and time, right? I'm not playing video games at 2 o'clock when I should be prospecting, adding people to my list. You know, I'm not playing, not playing video games on a Saturday morning when I'm all for R&R.
I'm all for R&R.
Yeah.
It can be an exercise, not a diversion.
Yeah. I like that. And oh man, you almost took me down a rabbit hole there, because AI, I have so many thoughts, but I don't want to get into it, because it's pretty negative. But I will say this for AI. One thing that I want to call out is, I actually just think we're all royally screwed. You know, I'm working with a company right now that basically works with, you know, inventory management with restaurants. And I look at like 1, 2, 3 location restaurants, you know, think about like your local burger shop that maybe, you know, has right. expanded a couple locations across the city, you know, not your Burger King's, McDonald's, In-N-Out's, Whataburgers, whatever might have you, Shake Shack's. And I just go like, how are they ever going to use AI? And they're not. These massive companies are going to figure out how to use AI in their specific industry, and they're going to use it. They're going to leverage it. They're going to implement it. And we're going to have 10 corporations running everything by the year 2050, my personal thought. But even with sales, it's like, I could never see their restaurant owners using AI. Like, I could never see the company using AI in their sales process directly relatable to the buyers themselves. Maybe the sellers are using AI to generate email templates and like all the things we already know in sales that we can do with AI. But it's just so weird to think about, like, how is that going to come into play? And I just don't think that the majority of people are going to have access and ability to make any change with it. I think it's just going to be corporations who can dump tens of millions of dollars into R&D to not only develop AI products, but also develop systems and use cases for AI in their business. Because like a restaurant, how is a restaurant going to use AI? Now, if we think about AI outside of just generative AI, which is what most people are calling AI, it's already being done. There's a thing called Flippy. It's a robot that uses, it makes burgers and fries, and it can do the work of like 10 people per hour. It's insane. And there's already a fully automated AI, because robotics and AI, restaurant out here in Pasadena, California, that's operating. So I see that in some form of capacity, but I think in the way that, yeah, like you said, most people think AI like to write a tweet, like that's not it. That's generative AI. That's one specific thing. There's so much more to AI than we're actually thinking about. But I just don't think that, I don't think that the layman is going to have the time, the resources, or the brain power to actually figure out how to harness it. And the government better figure out how to create a, what was that thing Andrew Yang tried to have, the monthly living tax, you know, or the monthly living free money bill or whatever. You know, everybody gets $1,000 a month. They're going to have to figure out something like that, because you're already seeing it. You're already seeing it with Meta doing layoffs, Zoom doing layoffs. Guarantee you 90% of those jobs that have been laid off outside of sales are just going to be something that's thrown into an AI bot, or some GPT that they made is going to run that job. It's already happening. It's not sanctioned.
You're right. But let me explain where my view is. The bottom half of the sales world is going to fall off. Mediocrity is no longer going to be an acceptable level of success. So if you and your company arbitrarily puts out some kind of sales goal or sales plan or sales number, which is total bullshit from some accountant that pulled it out of his ass, but still... There is a situation where you're expected to do stuff.
Yeah.
And if you're expected to sell activity, cold call, whatever it is that you do, AI is going to replace some of that in a heartbeat by providing the lower level things that you can do almost administratively, some with thought, some without thought. Certainly the mechanical stuff is all going to be AI, but the more sophisticated guy, you're not going to make $1 million sale on with the artificial intelligence. It's going to take a combination of artificial intelligence and actual intelligence. And to me, that's where I draw that line. If I can get actual intelligence going with artificial intelligence, I have a better shot at winning. Because it's a tool, not an answer. AI is a tool, not an answer. And so that's how I'm looking at it. And that's how I'm recommending to my clients go with it. Just internally get as much as you can going and then use it as a tool.
Yeah, I think it's actually a good thing for sellers because there's so much AI can do administratively. Yes, like you said, that they have been doing. But now companies will just be able to hire less sellers. I don't need to hire 8 AEs. Or 8 sell full-time, you know, full cycle sales reps to hit this number anymore, because all this stuff with like list building and data enrichment and ABM is all automated with AI now. And we're even using it to do the sales activities and we're getting appointments that way. I see people using some of these robocall, these AI robot callers. They're not bad. Some of them are pretty darn good. And this is the worst they're ever going to be, you know?
There's another element of this from a time management perspective, or I don't call it time management, I call it time allocation. Everybody still uses a keyboard. Mm-hmm. You honestly think a keyboard's going to be around in 5 years?
No, it's already being replaced.
Yeah. So Siri, whoever she is in the sky, or any kind of automated voice to text process. I wrote my last 7 books on voice to text. 7. I can correct shit on a keyboard because it's faster for me to just go backspace and fix it up. But to let my thought process out, no, I need stream of consciousness where I can just speak it.
Mm-hmm.
And so can anybody if they practice it. And so the challenge is, why are you using 100-year-old technology, literally, to tell me what's new?
That's what I like about that.
I just wanted to send you this email to tell you how great I feel. You're my customer and I want to thank you very much. Like, fucker, just text him. Like, Siri, text Bob and tell him he's a great guy. Okay. Just okay to send? Yeah. Okay. Send it. Okay. Bye.
I tried to do that with my podcast co-host yesterday. I saw the first Cybertruck ever in the real world. And I was like, why do I always like pull up my text, pull up the name, type it in? I was like, why don't I just hit the Siri button extra? I don't use Siri a lot myself, but I had to resend the text like 4 different times because it just felt so weird. It felt so weird when I was trying to speak what I would have just been able to type out quickly.
Yeah.
It was very odd. And I was like, I had to resend it like 4 times.
Chet, you get used to it. Mm-hmm. I promise you. And for me, it's like second nature now. There's no reason for me to type anything.
Yeah.
If you can type 55 words or 60 words a minute, you're flying.
Yeah.
You can at least double that with your speech, minimum.
Yeah. Well, that's actually how I'm writing my first book is I've just recorded a bunch of calls that I've had, like probably like 45 different calls about leadership, you know, one-on-one coaching calls, group coaching calls, podcasts that I've been on. And I've transcribed them all through the script and I have a system in place and some people doing the button pressing. Where they're kind of like pulling out things using AI from those transcripts. And that's then we're cool. Just going to package it together. And I mean, when you think about it, 45 calls that are at least a half an hour a piece, you know, what is that? That's over 20 hours worth of content. How long is the average book about like leadership? It's like five, six hours, maybe, you know, spoken word.
It's about 30,000 words these days.
Yeah. So I already have 20 hours of content, you know, pulled out and ready to go. So it's about, you know, we have them transcribed and I have people pulling stuff out and structuring them. And I think it's funny when I see people publish books with famous ghostwriters now, because I'm like, you could probably just do that yourself. You know, it's so much easier now. Like you can just literally record your keynote and put it in a book, you know?
No, your keynote's not that good, but I'm against...
You haven't seen my keynote though.
I will say this though, that I require, if you're going to elaborate your thoughts on selling, you just can't do it on a typewriter or on a keyboard. You just can't do it. I'm going to I'm going to make a cold call. Well, how do you do that? Well, how do you break the ice? Well, I walk into somebody's office and they say, can I help you? And I say, yeah, I'm here for my hair transplant. I'm going to make them smile. I'm going to make them feel like I'm there to have a good time with them. And AI is not going to use humor at all. But I have an idea for a book. And if we use it, we have to do it together. You ready?
Okay.
Finding the new pain.
Finding the new pain. Okay.
But AI is in the middle of pain and it's capitalized and made bigger.
There you go. I like that. It's visually appealing.
Exactly. Because the new pain is just unknown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the iPhone came out, it was unknown. When Google came out, it was unknown. When the watch came out, it was unknown. When the iPad came out, it was unknown. And now it's mainstream.
Yeah, but that's, you bring up something interesting. And this is coming from, that's very interesting you say that, because I feel like certain products that have come out, a lot of people buy them because they're just Apple diehards and they'll buy anything, you know?
Yeah. Present.
How vulgar can I be on this podcast? Because I have
there's my Steve Jobs business card.
There you go. Yeah. So like, here's the thing. I know so many people that have Apple watches. You know how many are probably actually functional with them? None. Yeah, they just wear them. And that's the beauty of Apple as a brand. But as a pain point, what does the Apple Watch really solve? You know what I mean? I get everything I could actually personally need out of an Apple Watch on my Whoop Band. You know what I mean? My dad gets everything he could use out of his Fitbit. And it's like, I just don't think, like, maybe I'm just not that uber productive where I need an Apple Watch because I'm on the go doing a bunch of extra junk. But
I don't have a watch. I just use my phone.
Yeah.
Because I think they do the same thing, but the phone is bigger and it's got more shit. So that's how I made the determination. And I had an Apple Watch when they first came out and they were cool. But after a while, it's like, it's too little. I can't fuck with it with my fingers. And
yeah,
leave me alone.
Even like the Apple Vision Pro, I realize they're selling a lot of them because it's cool. It's fun. It's a toy, right? But practical application, like, that's why I'm actually surprised at the Sense. Have you seen the Sense pin? I think it's called Sense. But it's the little pin you wear that's fully AI. It like watches everything you're doing and it shoots up a little screen if you need to like look at stuff and you can scroll with your fingers and it reads it. I was surprised at how little, I wasn't surprised, let me say that actually, at how little they actually sold. I'm not surprised they didn't sell a lot because their product launch was basically a 20-minute feature dump by two people that looked like they'd never been on camera and just didn't know how to act. Yeah. I am surprised it didn't sell though, because it really does solve a real problem. And it's almost like what you were talking about, voice to text. It's completely hands-free daily living.
Yep.
And that's it. You know what I mean? And it's amazing. It's literally like, hey, Sense, I'm going to meet Jeffrey at Cat's Deli in New York on Monday, you know, February 19th. Can you find me a gift shop on the way there? I want to buy him a nice bottle of liquor. And it'll literally like tell me where to go on my walk to Cat's Deli from my hotel on that day at that time, knowing what's open. It's like, I don't have to Google all that and look it up and cross-reference.
Actually, you could save a lot of money. Just ask me where the closest other deli is where they have desserts. And I'll take, there's a place called Russ and Daughter that's two houses down from Katz's, and they have the best arugula, they have the best chocolates. It's just unbelievable. So you walk in with that, you're home free for $20.
Yeah, there's so much that it can do, and it's all hands-free that it looks like it actually solves a problem for me. It solves a pain point. I don't want to fumble around with my phone a lot, you know?
There's human involvement in this. Mm-hmm. So let's go to Cat's Deli. There's two ways you can order a sandwich. You can stand online and get the meat cutter, or you can go to a table and get a server. You know, it's where Harry met Sally, you know, that mm-hmm. scene.
Yeah.
He's having. So when I go to Cat's Deli, it's like an experience for me. And I try to piss off the guy who's cutting my sandwich and take the guy behind me because I'm not going fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy will go, what do you want? I go, you know, came a long way here today. I'm thinking roast beef, or I'm not really sure about pastrami or corned beef. And the guy goes, all right, next. And I feel like I'm honored. And I give the guy $5 and he'll do whatever I want. But I want to have the test of, can I piss this guy off enough to take the person behind me? It's a self-test. So I'm constantly engaging people, trying to psychologically get my way, or what I think is my way. And that puts itself into sales all the time. So you go to a hotel, and I'm going to give you an example. Checking in. No, I'm here for my hair transplant. What do you think I'm doing? Yeah, we were full last night. Check-in time is 3:00. And I go, listen, your check-in time is 3:00. My check-in time is now. So go in the back there and get your mommy or your daddy and tell them that there's a customer out here. And he's hoping for two things. He's hoping for friendly and he's hoping for helpful. And he considers you neither. And that starts my engagement with somebody that tells me they're full last night and doesn't have a sense of humor. Yeah. So I've already identified who I'm dealing with. And I'm going to tell you, I've probably only done this 500 times. I get a room key every time.
Wow.
Yeah, they call me an asshole. Yeah, but I get a room key.
I could have used that when I was in Phoenix. We had to wait. We had to wait an hour past the promised check-in time. But usually I get pretty lucky myself. Maybe that's just because San Francisco is an absolute crap hole now. But anytime I go up there, it feels like I get there and I fly. Because LA to San Fran is a 45-minute flight. But I'm a cheap ass, so I like to fly early in the morning so I can get the cheapest flight possible. I'm landing at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. I'm at the hotel by 10. They're like, oh, I can get you in a room right now. Like San Francisco must be a crap destination now, because every time I go there, the hotels let me get in before noon. Everywhere else, it doesn't ever appear that way. You know, check-in's 3, 4 o'clock. Maybe I'll get in an hour or two early.
I agree. I'm talking about the human element that's always going to be involved.
Yeah, yeah.
The mediocre people are going to fall by the wayside. The smart human beings are going to win in this war. And it's a brand new war. There's 1,500 AI platforms right now. There will be 10,000 in another 3 years.
Yeah, but we all know that that's the same thing as consultants and social media marketing agencies.
I agree. I don't disagree with you, but
very broad term, but yeah.
Try to figure out who's what in advance, because there's going to be 100 of them that are going to be amazing.
The funny thing is how people act like AI is new. And I'm like, have you ever used a call recorder like Gong? Have you ever edited videos with Descript? It's an AI voice to text platform. Like, it's not new. You're just more aware of it. And there's also this push of generative AI, which is which is pretty crazy, which is also funny. Everybody's been showing like Sora, OpenAI's new video platform, like with text to video. Everybody's showing how wonky video looked. I don't know if you saw the AI video last year, the AI pizza commercial where people's mouths are like opening up too far and the cheese is like, and they were like showing that compared to now, a year later, what Sora looks like text to video through OpenAI. And everybody's like blown away. And then I saw one guy just post on Reddit. He's like, well, what did y'all expect? You gave him the data. You know, like, because all the inputs and work everybody's been doing has helped crafted the model. You know, it's all, that's one of the ways that they're doing it, is everything you input into the system. That's why I tell people all the time, I'm like, don't train GPTs. I'm like, don't create GPTs to like coach your salespeople. That's the worst thing you can do. You have no idea how much proprietary information you're entering in that you no longer own. People don't think about that stuff. And it's absolutely not nuts. Only
that, how much other wrong shit is in there.
Yeah, exactly. Because if it's training the model on itself, there might be people putting in, what do they call it? False positives.
I'm not looking at it for information. I'm looking at it for, how can I make my strategy more viable and more available to more people? And the answer is to have my own platform. And that's what I'm working at. So Gittimer AI will appear.
There you go. Yeah, it's definitely like it's like the .com or even the gold rush, right? Everybody's rushing to AI, but it's we digressed and went down a long rabbit hole from where we originally started the convo.
But if you want to know where it's going to be 100 years from now, go visit Placerville in California in the heart of the Sierra Nevadas and see what happened to that gold rush. Over.
Nothing.
It's a ghost town. They'll show you where the entrances to the mine used to be, and that's it.
Well, if you think about the you know, just the evolution of anything in general, we have created the end of the human race. And so I'd be surprised if we're even around in 100 years personally, especially with like when you look at how fast AI moves and you think about like those progressions and even just like think about 100 years ago. What 100 years ago, 1930, right? Or I'm sorry, 1924. Wow. I just put 6 years on our timetable here. 1924, right? What was around in 1924 that we still really use that was like core technology, like steam-powered boats? We still use steam-powered boats?
I think the two-word answer.
We even had a telephone. Nothing. Email basically came and went. What are we, you know, it's such a vast amount of time. It's like to think if this is the worst AI is ever going to be, what's next? Well, Musk already has the cyber implants. There you go. Now cyber implants connect to cybernetics and you create a whole cybernetics thing. Now we're fusing with robotic technology. We have AI implants in our head, where there's a slow morphing of human to hybrid to fully robotic, you know. And this we're going to get discovered by aliens in like 120 years, and they're going to show up on this planet. It's just going to be fully run by robots. There's just going to be robots everywhere, and they're going to be like, this is a weird planet, how did this ever happen? And it's going to be this whole evolution thing, you know how men came from monkeys, apes, which is very plausible, very possible. If you look at it, likely they are next to humans. We just might have been a superset that got outside of that. It'd be the same thing. Like, what a story that would be. That sounds like a plausible story when an aliens visit this place 200 years from now and It's just all shiny, metallic, robotic, weird looking cybernetic beings. And they're like, how did this ever happen? How is the whole place run by robots? And they just tell the story. Whoa, humans morphed into us. And then we ended up just being fully, fully robotic. It's how everything happens.
I look at it from a human standpoint and from a humor standpoint. There's an old Woody Allen story that says one day everybody in the world woke up and they started to sew pants, and a spaceship landed and the guy comes out of the spaceship and says, are the pants ready? And the leader of the free world says, no, can you come back Thursday? And they come back Thursday to get their pants, and the joke's on them because they forgot their ticket. And so that's the way the whole thing rolls. There's you can say about whatever you think is going to happen in the future, but no one knows. No one knows what's going to happen with AI. Not one fucking person on the planet can predict that ending. We just have to sort of stay and watch it and watch what happens. No one could have said that record stores are going to become obsolete for a decade while iPad takes over, while Apple Music takes over. No one could have predicted that. This guy, Steve Jobs, changed the music world completely in 1 year. Been around for 100 years, changed it completely, and now it flourishes as good as it ever did. But people thought, oh, no, this is a death because you can't get this or that. Now, all of a sudden, vinyl records are coming back. And instead of being $7, they're $28.
Yeah. Well, one person did predict it. Isaac Asimov did.
That's
all true. His novelizations. All the digitization of the world and elimination of physical records and needs.
Yeah.
he definitely predicted it. But even in the book, iRobot, when the old school stuff comes back, the more tangible goods, it's the same thing. It's so funny because that's exactly what happens now.
Yeah,
vinyl records were $7.99. It was a commodity. It was a normal purchase. Now it's like a luxury. It's like a trinket. It's like a collectible. And they're $30, $40, $50. There's the same thing in iRobot when he gets the shoes. It's like nobody's wearing those shoes anymore. So the shoes, he pays like 3 months salary because the shoes are considered vintage and a collectible. And they're like, why are you wearing these Jordans? You know what I mean? Like, this is like these new shoes. You shouldn't be wearing those. You should be putting them in a case somewhere. You know, they're nobody wears or the Converses. Sorry. Nobody wears those anymore. So yeah,
if you want to see the humor version, go to Woody Allen and watch the movie Sleeper, and you'll see what happens in the future. They find out that baby Ruths are actually the secret to life's longevity. And, you know, that because no one knows, literally no one knows. So I live in wonder, and I do the best I can with what I've got right now. And I'm a dad, and I'm a granddad, and I'm a great granddad, and I take care of my family. But I wake up in the morning, and the first person I take care of is me. I don't sacrifice my life for, I gave you the best years of my life. Don't be doing that. Keep some for yourself. They're your best years. So put yourself in a situation where we're trying to move forward and we're looking for answers. The answers will appear. If you can't affect it, just leave it alone. You'll be fine. You'll be totally fine. But in the meantime, I'm going to try my ass off to get out to LA to have a hamburger with you.
Yeah, that'll be I'll be looking forward to that. That'll be fun.
That's life. I think that's how you rule life.
Yeah.
When people get together, there's an attraction.
It's right. If you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. I think that's your key takeaway here.
That's a great line.
Yeah. I like that you say live in wonder. Yeah. Live in wonder. I like that. It's good. It's
phenomenal. Okay, so we're going to wrap it up, you guys. We have not had an argument yet about why cold calling is a fucking stupid waste of time, but we'll have that argument in another meeting. I have a feeling this will be another podcast at some point in time, or maybe I'll get on Chet's podcast, and we'll see what happens. In the meantime, you guys get out there and make a sale, even if your ass falls off. Thanks, Chet.
Thanks, Jeffrey. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the show.
Don't forget to like, share.
Yeah, share with both your friends.
And subscribe to the podcast.
And remember, we have a free 22-day sales challenge. Just go to gitomer.com/saleschallenge to start you on your way.